Okay, after an introduction like that, I think I should put on a magic show.
Next week.
That's right. Next week. Okay,
so first of all, poschim b'chvod achzanya. We were taught we're supposed to start with the honor of the Baal or Baalas Habayis or both, so we are thankful to the Frankels for opening up their home for this shir and other community activities, and I have personal hakar satov to the Frankels for helping me in numerous ways. Special thank you to Dahlia and Diane and the sisterhood for all that they do, and particularly for putting this shir together, and we're very appreciative, and thank you to all of you for coming out. I know we're all busy, and people have a lot to do, and it is encouraging to see that people make the time to review halacha, so thank you all for being here, and I'll try to make it as beneficial and to the point as we possibly can. Rabbi Yehoshua Neuwirth, who is known as the author of the Shmirah Shabbos Kelchasa, which is, I guess you could say, the book on contemporary Hilchos Shabbos. It's a classic encyclopedic work. It's what we call a Miyut HaMachzik HaSamaruba, a small book that has a lot in it. Each footnote I could make a shir out of. He passed away just a couple of years ago in 2013. So he put out his Sefer a number of times. He put out one edition in 1965, another edition in 1980, and then very recently in 2010 he put it out a final edition of the Shmirah Shabbos Kelchasa, expanded with updated shilas that people ask. By the way, if you don't believe that the world is changing rapidly, two people asked me to tape tonight's shir. Some of you don't even know what that means. But we are recording it. So if you have any complaints, save them for afterward. But the world is changing, so he updated the Sefer a number of times. In the last edition of Shmirah Shabbos Kelchasa, which was published in 2010, just a few years before his passing, he began it with some personal reflections, tells the story of his survival during the Holocaust, and it happens to be that Shmirah Shabbos saved his family and family members a number of times. He tells the story there how his sister, they were in Holland, and after the German occupation of the Netherlands, so they were in hiding, his sister, who looked more Aryan than the rest of them, was able to go out among the others and get food for them, and for a while they had her working for a Dutch family. But she had to work the hardest on Shabbos. They were actually preparing for Sunday, and she had to work on Shabbos, and she couldn't take it. She would sneak back to where they were hiding. Their lives were in constant danger. But she would sneak back, and she reported to her father, "They make me work a lot on Shabbos, and I can't take it." And finally they said, "Okay, so just you'll join us," even though that was much more dangerous. So on a Friday, she decided to come home. They received word on Sunday that the house where she had been working had taken a direct hit, and no one had survived. It's one of numerous stories that he tells in the introduction to Shmirah Shabbos Kelchasa about how Shmirah Shabbos protected their family. Rav Neuwirth had a special connection to the laws of Shabbos throughout his life, and the observance of Shabbos is a Shmirah. We are Shomer Shabbos, but Shabbos is Shomer us. The Chafetz Chaim, in his introduction to the third volume of the Mishneh Brura, records, the Chafetz Chaim always gives a simple but powerful Musar. At the end of Koheles, it says, Sov Dover HaKol Nishma. The end is that everything will be heard. The Targum, if you look in the Aramaic translation alongside at the end of Koheles there, it says, ultimately we are all rebuilt in Olam Haba, the 248 limbs and the 365 sinews. The way a human being is rebuilt is based on one's mitzvah observance. And a mitzvah that is lacking, so that limb, kevayochel, can be disfigured or lacking. And Shmirah Shabbos is a vital organ. Shmirah Shabbos is not a pinky. It's not a foot. It's a vital organ. So we invest so much time and energy in things in our lives that are fleeting, that aren't everlasting. Shmirah Samitzvahs is, and the way we rebuild ourselves, particularly with regard to Shmirah Shabbos, is very, very important. So it's good to come together. I appreciate the opportunity to give such a shir. A shir on Hilchos Shabbos would be many, many, many hours, but as the graphic alongside the email indicated, it had I think it had two matzo balls. And so it's we're going to talk about the laws of cooking on Shabbos, and maybe we'll have other opportunities. But even the email itself spurred my getting questions in Hilchos Shabbos again. So even without the shiur, there's already been benefit. What I'd like to try to do is to give an overview, also focusing on some particular angles that maybe sometimes you don't see if you read books on Hilchos Shabbos. One thing that might be unique about what I want to do tonight is I want to talk about where there are different practices, particularly Sephardim and Ashkenazim, because I often get shilas where somebody says, I saw such and such. Is that against the halacha? No, that's actually that's their minhag, and sometimes it leads to confusion within communities. It's also beneficial to understand when something is absolutely forbidden versus when something is just not what the poskim whom I follow say to do, but it's a legitimate sheet that makes a difference if you make a mistake yourself. Did you do something that's totally wrong, or something that's just not the opinion that we follow? That's relevant. I'd also like to talk about some of the leniencies that Rav Moshe Feinstein held of, and where you might also encounter somebody will say, what did you do that? And you'll find out because in Eretz Yisrael it's done differently or elsewhere. So I'd like to give an overview class. Hopefully it's a review of a lot of things that we know, hopefully clarifying things that we know, but also zeroing in on some specifics. So whenever we talk about I was going to say feel free to ask questions, but I'm reconsidering. Don't. Just don't fall asleep, but I don't want to get sidetracked. No, if anything's not clear, please don't be bashful. Whenever we talk about Hilchos Shabbos, it's important to lay out the pieces from the beginning. There are things that are biblically prohibited. Bishul, cooking on Shabbos is biblically prohibited. And then there are things that are midrabbanan, that are rabbinic prohibitions. Generally speaking, if you are actually cooking something, if an halacha is considered uncooked and you are cooking it, that's going to be a Torah prohibition. If it's already cooked and you're doing something that looks like cooking, it feels like cooking, oftentimes that will fall into the rabbinic category. And any activity that we're going to ask, is this permissible or not, I have to figure out, first of all, is it an Issur D'Oraisa? Is it prohibited from the Torah? And second of all, does it fall into the rabbinic category? Sometimes these are called bishul versus chazara or nesina lechachila. We'll leave the Hebrew terms aside, but we have to ask, does it run into an isser min ha-Torah? Does it run into an isser midrabban? Is there a Torah prohibition? Is there a rabbinic? Plus, we'll have to talk about, there's something called shahia, leaving something to cook from Friday into Shabbos. Under certain circumstances, that's not permissible. Not too hard to circumvent, but you have to know what you're doing. It happens a lot in this season when Shabbos is early and somebody is running home from work and realizes, oh, I didn't put up the chalent or whatever it might be. So we have to know the laws of shahia. And then there's also the laws of hatmana, of insulating, of wrapping, which really is its own category, doesn't usually overlap too much with other things, but we should touch on that as well. So when it comes to cooking, the Torah prohibition of cooking, we have to distinguish between solids and liquids. So what makes something, now I'm already shifting into my high school classroom mode. So what makes something considered a Torah prohibition of cooking a solid? What do you have to do to have violated the Torah in cooking a solid food? Okay. It's when you cook it to the degree of machal ben drusoy, which is either half or a third cooked. If it takes an hour to cook this piece of meat and I cooked it for 20 minutes, that's a third cooked. So then I violated the Torah prohibition of cooking. However, cooking it beyond that point, according to many Rishonim, is also prohibited. So if I had, we always talk about chulin. We do a Hilchos Shabbos, so we'll do that. But if I had a chalent and I put it up with enough time before Shabbos that it's, let's say, half cooked, and I took it off the fire, and I open the lid and I look and I see, oh, it's somewhat rare, it's not really fully done, to put it back onto the flame to cook, onto the crock pot or whatever it might be, is a serious problem. Even if I keep my hand on it and I have it, it doesn't help, it's not fully cooked. When something is not fully cooked, cooking it further may be a Torah prohibition. There's not really any way around that. So cooking it to that point is prohibited, but cooking it beyond that point till it's fully cooked is also a Torah prohibition. Once something is fully cooked, then we just get into the issue of whether there's a rabbinic prohibition. I have a food that's fully cooked, but if I put it back on the fire, in some circumstances it looks like I'm cooking. feels like cooking. It's too similar to cooking. So we'll talk about what one has to do to make that permissible. Am I sufficiently confusing at this point? No, everything's clear. Is it painfully obvious? Boring? No. Okay. when it comes to, by the way, but there's a rabbinic prohibition even to leave something for a second in a place where it could cook. In other words, if I just want to warm something up, it's ice cold and I want to warm it up and I'm not going to leave it there. Right? It's like the guy who got pulled over for speeding and the officer said, "Do you know you're driving 85 miles an hour?" And he said, "Yeah, but I wasn't going to be out for that long." Right? So it doesn't... Anyway. My jokes are... But it doesn't matter. It's called Gzeres Hafshir. Gzeres, that if you're defrosting something, but if it were you to leave it there, it could reach a temperature that would be problematic, so you're not allowed to leave it there even temporarily. As an aside, in the cliché, it's probably permissible, but I don't want to confuse people, but that doesn't have too much application. But, so midrabbanan, as a rabbinic prohibition, you can't even defrost something temporarily. If had you left it there, it would reach a temperature, reach a degree of cooking, which is prohibited from the Torah. So the rabbi said, "We're afraid you're going to forget it, so don't put it there at all."
Can you just clarify that? Like, you take out a piece of frozen, cooked, something frozen cooked?
Well, if it's liquid.
Oh, if it's liquid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything that would be considered problematic if you leave it there for a long time is problematic to put it there even temporarily.
And that
generally speaking,
liquid or something that's not fully cooked.
Right. So the problem with the Hilchos Shabbos, everything's interconnected. So I didn't say that yet, so I can't explain it. Right. But assuming that a liquid that's already cold, if we assume, and we do assume, that a liquid that's already cold, you can't reheat. In most instances, so then, yeah, to take that liquid food, that soup that's already cold, and put it on the fire. You know, I was just thawing it. I wasn't going to let it reach a hot temperature, but it's problematic because it could, for an ill person, it might be permissible. There's certain exceptions, but generally speaking, you can't do it temporarily because the halacha is afraid you're going to forget. Just put it there, you get distracted, and then you violate the Torah. When it comes to a liquid, generally speaking, the problem of cooking is incurred when it reaches the temperature known as Yad Seletispo, the temperature at which your hand would recoil if you touched it, which is probably somewhere, we're going to say it's between 110 and 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Those are the temperatures that Rav Moshe Feinstein held of. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a proof it can't be less than 114 degrees Fahrenheit, but let's say it's between 110 and 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Somewhere in there is called Yad Seletispo. So we have to, it's the temperature at which it's considered to have cooked. So we have to be strict for that whole span. In other words, where it's a leniency to assume that it's reached Yad Seletispo, you have to work with 160. Where it's a... leniency to assume it hasn't, you have to go the other way. In other words, we're not sure we've reached Yad Seletispo, but somewhere between 110 degrees and 160 degrees. If I have a liquid that's reached 120 degrees and I'm going to cook it further, that's problematic because I'm not sure that it's reached Yad Seletispo. In fact, let me... yeah, question?
Is there a difference in opinion between Sephardim and Ashkenazim about heating liquids on Shabbos?
So, when solids and liquids are mixed, yes. It's not really Ashkenazim versus Sfardim per se, but Rav Avadya Yosef paskened very emphatically one way, which if I don't come to it, throw a tomato in a few minutes and I'll remember. But yeah, there's a significant difference what's called liquid and what's called solid. It makes for has a lot of applications. Almost no broader... single difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim in warming food and that distinction. So I hope to come to that soon. But let me clarify something. I was sitting at a simcha last week and there were seltzer bottles that said Shabbos friendly cap. I thought that was very... So there are Shabbos friendly soda caps. And there are Shabbos-friendly hot water urns. You will see some urns that first have a setting that boils it, and then there's a maintenance temperature less than that. Let me explain what that is. Not scientifically, but halachically. According to some poskim, unless water or any liquid has reached a temperature which basically means boiling, unless it's been boiled, it hasn't been fully cooked. So if it's only 160 degrees, and then you're going to add that water to, let's say, a chalent that's drying out, that's no good, because it was only at this threshold, only at this temperature, and you're making it hotter. There are poskim, there are numerous poskim who held that way. Rav Moshe Feinstein did not. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva to Rav Shimon Eider, who wrote a Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, where he asked him all the questions, what do you hold on this and what do you hold on that? Rav Moshe held, once it's reached Yatza Letisbo for sure, which we say is 160 degrees. Elsewhere he wrote 175, but it seems to be held 160 degrees. It's cooked. There's no problem to cook it any hotter. So once a liquid has reached that temperature, making it hotter is not a problem. Those who don't follow that leniency will need the water to have been boiled first. That's the benefit of, let's say, urns like that, that first cook it all the way and then maintain it at a lower temperature. You could add that water to a chalent that's drying out or some other dish, according to everyone, because it already reached Yatza Letisbo and then cooled down. You will find people who will not take something that only reached, let's say, 160 degrees and then put it in something that's hotter. Again, Rav Moshe held it's okay. But if you see people of different practices, that's the reason for it.
Typically, our water urns, what temperature?
They're above 160, but they're not 212. I mean, they're not boiling. So the ones that boil it first give you that advantage that you're covered for all poskim. In fact, let me elaborate on that. Didn't forget your question, Gully. But let me elaborate on that. Water is water. No matter where your place of ancestry is water, but we'll talk about where there's a difference. What were we talking about? I have no notes. All I brought was a Kohelis and a revert. Right. Okay, let's talk about the Great Compromise, not of 1787. What was Sherman's Compromise? When was that? I'm off by a few years. Okay, anyway, but the Great Compromise of the Ramah, let me explain as follows. And this is background, but it's helpful to understand how things work. According to some Rishonim, once a liquid has been cooked, even if it cools down, it's considered cooked, and there's no more Torah prohibition to recook it. Again, according to some Rishon, if you boil water and now you put it in a bottle, if this was boiled, it would not be a Torah prohibition to reheat it, even though it's cold now. Because once something is cooked, it's been cooked. Just like if you cook a piece of meat and now it's brown, you cooked it properly, even though it's cold, there's no Torah prohibition to recook a solid food. So many Rishonim actually hold the same thing with a liquid. Others say, no, when it comes to a liquid, the process is reversible. When you scramble an egg and you let it cool down, it doesn't go back to being raw. But when you cook water and you let it cool down, it goes back to pretty much the way we interpret things. It's like the process was reversed. So there's a machlokas. There's a difference of opinion among the great Rishonim. Halacha is all based on their words. Whether water that's cooled down, a liquid that's cooled down, is there now a Torah prohibition to recook it? So how do we rule on this? So, So the Ramah says it really, we treat it pretty, the Shulchan Aruch says it's prohibited, so for Sfardim really it's prohibited, but the Ramah cites a very strange minhag. He says, if it's cooled down all the way to room temperature, then you're not allowed to reheat it. But if it's still warm, and most poskim say the Shulchan Aruch, Rav says he means warm enough to serve as a warm food, then you can reheat it. In other words, I have a chicken soup. It was cooked. And now it's been off the fire for a while. And now it's not really hot anymore. But I would still serve it. If guests wanted a second serving of soup, it's not cold that you'd be embarrassed to serve. It's warm enough. Sometimes the soup is not so hot, never in our house. But in other houses, sometimes the soup is not so hot. Because they don't know the Hilchos Shabbos. But sometimes the soup is not so hot, and you would still serve it. If it's still that warm, then you can actually reheat it. As long as you circumvent any rabbinic prohibitions, there's no Torah prohibition to reheat that soup. And it's a very strange thing because it doesn't fit into either category. It's like you feel like saying, Well, which way do you hold? If you hold that it's got to be hot, it should have to be hot. If you hold it's allowed to be cold, it should even be if it's cold. There are masses v'nohagu, there's a minhag, and we paskin like this minhag, that as long as it hasn't cooled down to room temperature, as long as it's warm enough to serve, then you can reheat it. So the way most poskim interpret that is really we hold like the lenient opinion, that this is, well not this, but the water that was cooked once is considered cooked, but we're somewhat stringent. And therefore, for Ashkenazim, that is the halacha. If it was cooked once, as long as it's still warm, it can be reheated. And this has a lot of application. Yeah?
A cup of tea, you're drinking it, and when it gets a little cold, then you put hot water in it?
Right, so there you go. You know, I was scrambling. I said it has a lot of application, and then I drew a blank. Unfortunately, there's a case, okay? So if I'm drinking tea, and now it's not hot anymore, it's under 110 degrees. So everybody would agree it's not, in halacha, it's not called hot, but it's still warm enough you would drink it as tea. If you were sitting and drinking warm tea, you would still consider that warm tea. So now, in halacha, it's still considered hot enough that you can reheat it. I can take straight from the urn onto that tea, even though I'm pouring from a kli rishon. Why? Because it hasn't cooled down entirely.
So if I want to reuse the tea bag, I can pour more hot water on that tea bag.
Yeah, I didn't really get into tea bags yet, but
I don't lift my tea bag out.
Right. Yeah. Yes, you could. If it gets cold, then I would want to flip it into a klisheni. But that in halacha, since it hasn't cooled down all the way, that's the Ramah's great compromise. As long as it's still warm enough to serve, there's no problem to reheat that liquid. Yeah.
So I might be asking a question that has to do with halacha.
Everything's interconnected, yeah, so I'll do my best.
So if I make chicken soup Friday night and my husband gets home because of fellowship hours after Shabbos and I want to eat before he gets home because I don't want to wait till 10 o'clock, if I take the chicken soup off the blach and it stays warm, I can put it back, and I take for myself, I can put it back on the blach and keep it hot for him.
All right, so let's address blach issues. So there's certainly a way you can keep it warm, but we just have to do it the right way. And here too, there are slight differences. Let's jump over to blechs, which hardly exists anymore. Everybody know what a blech is? People have
one.
It's traditional. I'm taping this year. A blech is a sheet of metal. A hot plate, more common. All right, whatever it is. Not really, but just a blech is a Yiddish word for a sheet of metal used to cover fire many years ago when I was a boy. No, some people still have them? No, they're good. They're good. Okay, good.
I tried hot pots and I didn't like the way they were working.
Okay.
Good,
good.
And it was small.
I tell you, warming drawers and hot plates, some people never heard of a blech, but it's good. Okay.
A sheet of metal on top of my stove. One burner is hot, the rest of it is not on.
Right.
And I don't put anything right over the...
Okay, good. So let's jump over to that for 1 second. Chazara, returning something to the fire, okay? Conventional wisdom. First I'm going to be conventional, and then I'm going to be unconventional. But the conventional wisdom, which is the way most standard Ashkenazic Sfarim will record the halacha, is that in order to do chazara to a blech, in order to return something to the fire, you need the following five conditions. In other words, I took something off the fire, I took the chicken soup off the heating element of the fire Friday night, and I'd like to be able to return it. The standard wisdom is that you need the following five conditions. First and foremost, most important of all, is that the food is fully cooked. Okay, there's always these horror stories, all the rappers, when they give a shiur, there's two opaque closed pots on the fire, and you send someone who doesn't know what they're doing, usually your husband, into the kitchen, and he takes the wrong one off, and that one wasn't fully cooked yet, now you can't put it. So the first thing is it's got to be fully cooked. If you take it off and you open it up and you discover it's only half cooked, we're out of business. Don't bother walking to my house. I have nothing to, no help to offer. But if the first one is it's got to be fully cooked, which means really it's well cooked. It's cooked to the, that's the way you'd want to eat it. It's not rare. It's fully cooked. Which usually if you put up things Friday morning, that's usually the case anyway. Has to be fully cooked. Has to still be warm. if somehow we'd be dealing with a scenario, we have it off so long that it's not warm anymore, well then we have the problem that, as we just said, the Ramah's great compromise is you can only return a liquid to the fire if it's still warm. By the way, probably even a solid has to still be warm also.
It's so, warm or hot?
Huh?
It, warm?
It would what for you? Hot. it's the Ramah who's lenient. The Ramah is lenient and says warm. The truth is the Machab Maran says it's got to be, probably has to be hot, which usually
it's
would be.
Warm, I can't put it back.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah, yeah. But we'll find the leniency. There's some leniencies on the other side too. But hold on. Then usually we say as follows: you need to have the fire covered. Blech. You need to have a blech. You need to keep a hand on it. And you need to have in mind you're going to put it back.
Hand on the blech?
No, don't put your hand on the blech. I have to be very careful with what I say. Don't put your hand on the blech. You have to keep a hand on the pot. Okay? You have to keep a hand on the pot. Which, by the way, doesn't mean you can't put it on a counter. I always tell this story when I was in yeshiva. The guys on these long winter Friday nights, they used to like to steal chalent Friday night. They'd have night seder and learn for hours, and then at midnight they're hungry and they wanted to go. There's a huge chalent in the kitchen, they wanted to take some. So the two strongest guys in yeshiva were holding up this chalent pot while another guy was dishing out as fast as he could. Quick, quick, quick. And then they put it back. The truth is, you don't really have to be suspending it in midair. You can put it on the counter and keep a hand on it. Don't put it on the floor, not that you'd want to. But on karka, on the ground, is worse. But if you keep a hand on it, it's often beneficial to have two people. One person takes it off and keeps a hand on it. The other person does the dishing out. And then you cover it and put it back on. Those are, generally speaking, the five conditions of chazara, the way most Ashkenazim would paskin. There are other opinions. First of all, the Ramah does mention a minhag that Rav Soloveitchik spoke about. I know many people who follow his psukim religiously talk about this minhag, that if something was on the fire at the beginning of Shabbos, that then you don't need to keep a hand on it and need to have in mind. In times of old, they didn't have a gas range or electric. There was nothing keeping it hot. They had these stoves that were stuffed with coal, and the whole town would put their cholent in there, and they would sometimes take things out and they would eat from it, but then they wanted to have it warm for later. The only option was to put that food back in. So there was a minhag to be lenient. There was a custom to be lenient that as long as it was fully cooked and there was the equivalent of a blech, that they would put it back in if they didn't keep a hand on it, and even if they didn't necessarily have in mind to put it back, according to some. I don't want to confuse everyone, but some hold if at the beginning of Shabbos it was on the fire, that then you don't need all of those conditions. Most people don't rule that way, though. Most hold those are the five conditions that you need. But again, first and foremost is the fact that it's fully cooked. So I don't know if I addressed... so the chicken soup. If the chicken soup is still warm enough to serve, which usually it will be for hours... So to put it directly back on the blech, most Ashkenazim wouldn't do l'chachila. They'd only do that if they kept a hand on it and had in mind to put it back. However, if you only discover it later, if I suddenly realize, oh boy, I really need to reheat this. I have somebody coming in 3 hours and it's going to be cold, then even without those two conditions, we would rule that it is permissible. As long as, again, it's fully cooked and it's still warm and you have a blech, those are the main three. That you'd need. Plus, if you invert a pan, now this is for Ashkenaz, for Sephardim it's a little more lenient, but we consider a blech somewhat like cooking. Maybe I should step back and give a little bit of the theory. Why is it that you can return it if you keep your hand on it, you had in mind? What's the difference? Either it's cooking or it's not. I mean, the answer is because if it looks like just a continuation of what you were doing before, it doesn't feel like you're initiating the cooking process on Shabbos. It was there, it was fully cooked, I took it off temporarily, I kept my hand, I was going to put it right back, it's just a continuation of what I was doing before. But you take it off, you take your hand on it, you put it down, and then somebody walks in and sees you, or just the way you think of it yourself, now there's something on the counter, and I take it and I put it on the fire, it feels like I'm initiating a process, that feels too much like cooking. Even though it's not cooking, because it's fully cooked already, and it's still warm, but without those conditions, it feels too much like cooking, so to speak. So it's only if it feels like the continuation of cooking that's when it would be permissible. But we treat a blech as somewhat like cooking. If you do something that's totally removed from a normal way of cooking, you don't need those conditions of keeping a hand on it and having in mind. For example, no one cooks on a radiator, with the exception of my roommate in yeshiva, who cooked on an iron, cooked on all kinds, but it's not considered a normal mode of cooking. So if you're going to cook in a way that's totally abnormal, that generally circumvents the rabbinic prohibitions. So if I have a chicken soup that was cooked, and it's hot, and I took it off, and it's sitting on the counter, and I say, you know what, I really need to rewarm this. Most would paskin that to put it directly right back in the blech is too similar to cooking, and we shouldn't do that lechachila. But if I put it on some other hot surface, a radiator, or I invert a pan and put it on that, or I don't think this would work, but on top of a chulin pot or something like that, that's a step removed. That's such a bizarre way of cooking that it doesn't get into the rabbinic prohibition of it feels like cooking, because it doesn't, because it's bizarre, it's totally atypical, it's not the way we cook. So then, as long as you've circumvented the biblical prohibition, as long as it is fully cooked and for Ashkenazim, as long as it's still warm, then you're okay and you don't need those other criteria. Does that make sense? Yeah.
That doesn't have temperature control would be the same. It would be no different than flipping that pan or not, because it doesn't have that status.
So I mean, there's two things. So a hot plate that you can't cook on, it's only used for warming, is probably better than a blech. In other words, a blech, this is my cooktop, but I covered it with a sheet of metal, but it's still somewhat similar to cooking. If it's a hot plate that's really only used for warming, then that would be the equivalent to putting it on a radiator. So a lot of people hold, if you could cook on it, then it's better to invert something over. There are those who hold that if it's just not used that way, it's okay. It's a little better if you can invert something on top.
It doesn't matter how thick that, it could be a cookie pan, like a cookie.
Yes, it could be something shallow, yeah. Just
So you're saying that you do need to have a pan, like an electric hot plate that has enough.
I would advise it.
Not if you meet the other five conditions.
Huh? Right, if you meet the other five conditions, you don't need that. Yeah. Let me just explain.
In general, like warm up food in general for Shabbos on a hot plate like this.
Generally, let's say you're going to take a solid, fully cooked food out of the refrigerator, yeah, I would advise inverting a pan. Rav Avadya Yosef is more lenient than that. He holds that it's a complicated background how you come to that conclusion, but he's more he would construe a hot plate or a blech as something you could take a dry piece of potato cook and put it right on. For most Ashkenazim, I would say better to invert a pan. Yeah.
So the inverted pan is more than serves a different purpose than covering the foil.
Right. It's a step removed from a blech. A blech is sort of quasi the way we paskin.
You put tin foil on top of your hot plate. That would be considered a blech.
Well, it should have some. It should be like an inverted pan. There's no different. One blech or two blech or three. I mean, the tinfoil is just another blech. So it should be qualitatively something, like some shallow pan inverted is what I would recommend.
Yeah.
No mass confessional. Yeah.
So, but just to clarify, the electric hot plate, like I have an electric hot plate, but not the Israeli one that like you can literally cook.
It's for warming.
Right, so that you don't have to use the
right. So that really doesn't have the rabbinic categories. It's not used for cooking, so we're not afraid it looks like cooking. So the only thing you have to ask yourself is what I'm about to do actually cooking? If it's a liquid that cooled down, we have a problem. If it's a food that's not fully cooked, we have a problem. Even if it's a food that was once cooked and now it's going to get roasted because now it's dry, that would be a problem. But as long as there's no actual cooking taking place, the problem of it looking like cooking doesn't exist because it's not used for cooking.
So then with the chicken soup example, and if I take it off early to give to the kids, and then I want to put it back on.
Yeah, if that's a hot plate used just for warming, that would
so
be permissible.
The,
yeah, you don't have to do all the five conditions. Right.
Even if it could get boiled down.
So that's a gray area. Some posts can hold, if you could cook on it, could you cook a soup on it?
Yeah.
No.
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 No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No
24 hours.
Yeah, if it'll take 24 hours, then I don't think you can cook on it.
It's definitely not a horrible way to burn your
schnitzel. It can burn your schnitzel, but it can't.
But it can't cook a soup. Yeah, burn your schnitzel just means the outside's getting singed. Huh?
I think it would burn. It can burn.
So that means it's meant for warming. It's meant for warming, not for cooking. Yeah. Yeah.
For me, the only option I can put a hot soup. I never did a put soup back in fridge. I didn't know I can allow to. But if it's still hot and I'm just serving and I'm putting it, I can put it right back on the hot plate or not.
If you take a soup off and you keep your hand, I have in mind I'm going to put it back. So I take it off the fire, I keep a hand on it, I open the lid, I serve it out to a few bowls, I put the lid back on it, and there's a blech there, then I can...
On a hot plate,
yeah, yeah.
Now another question.
As long as it's fully cooked and you know, all those conditions, yeah.
Now about the chulent on Shabbos Day, when it's cooked, so if I want to serve the kids like 12 hours before my husband comes, so I just want to ask if it's okay to do. What if I'm taking it from the carpet, and then I'm serving it like to the kids, and even in a few minutes in my mind to bring it back, I'm putting it back, but I'm not putting it back in it. I just put it plate, and then I put it in. So it's not right like touching it. It's just like cliching it. That's okay to do or not?
So what is in the crock pot base, you put a
and you still hot yeah toilet bowl,
right?
And then I'm not putting it right in the carpet. I'm just putting like a plate, a heavy plate, and then it's like cliche on the inside. That's what I did.
Uh-huh.
I heard, but I'm not. I just want to.
Right, so that's an inverted pan. So yeah, that should be okay.
So that should be okay from the tchila, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because again, that's not a normal way to cook. It's on top of a... Especially for sardine.
Yeah, but if I'm not putting a plate, I can put it like right in, right? That's a problem?
So it could be sardine are more lenient than that. Ravadi is more, maybe more lenient. But if you can...
What is it, like from a can?
Yeah, more makil, yeah. But if you're doing it the way you just said, it's better. That way you're covered. Yeah, so yeah.
No,
I have foil, but I'm still putting it.
Right, so foil lining a crock pot is a blech.
And
yeah, right. But you're talking about...
I put like an opposite plate,
right.
Upside down, yeah. So then
yeah,
it's like
yeah, so that's
fun.
Real good. I've never even seen that, but that's a good idea. That gets around the problem, right. So let me mention... Yeah.
Or is that for anywhere on the blech? If you're
on the periphery of the blech, so much so that it's not really hot, then you don't need it.
But anywhere where it's hot?
Anywhere where the food could reach outside lettuce, where the food will reach, let's say, 110 degrees, then you should invert the pan.
And if you, crumple up a bunch of foil, so it's, not actually inverted, but it has nice depth to it, does that count?
Hmm.
I saw that.
My iterator may not be
whatever. Someone who took foil and made kind of logs out of it, you know, yeah. And put that on top of her on her blech, and then put the things on top of those pieces of foil. Instead of inverting a pan, I do that with my crock pot.
Right, that's something else. Well, that's the end of this year. That was the famous day right before Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was nifter. He wrote something that caused a lot of confusion, but that's with regard to hatamana. But is that equivalent to an inverted pan?
Really, probably is not a typical way of cooking.
Right. I would think.
You have to make those logs on top, or you have to make them
before. I think you'd make them before. Or you could have the kids make them. It could be a project in school. Shabbos logs. What parsha? What parsha are we making that for? I don't know. But it should be okay. By the way, some poskim. True story. I went to pick up one of our children from someone's house in this community, and the father. This was years ago. The father showed me, saw in a sefer that said you can't invert a pan for this purpose on Shabbos. It's not legitimate. And I wrote a letter to the author of that sefer. He's a very prominent rav. I actually have this in the little book that I put out a couple of years ago. This letter, it doesn't have his name, but the letter is in there. And I saw him a couple years later at a bris. I put the proof text why I felt that one could be lenient, and he said, "Yeah, I think you're right." So, and Rav Moshe held you can do this, and Shlomo Rav held you can do this. So we do the inverted pan. I think that would work too. It seems to be far enough removed from the blech that should work as well if you make some kind of suspension system, some kind of artificial grate. That sounds okay. Now, a very significant matter in halacha, which makes for a big difference in practical application for Ashkenazim and Sfardim, is as follows. I said before, there's a difference between a solid food and a liquid food. A solid food, once it's cooked, you cooked a piece of chicken, so even though it's cold, but there's no more problem of cooking it again. Ein bishul achar bishul. There's no such thing as cooking after cooking. So even though it's cold, but the change to it, the qualitative change has been permanently affected. So all you have to do is circumvent the rabbinic prohibitions. But it's cooked. You're not going to violate the Torah's law of cooking. But when it comes to liquids, we said since many Rishonim hold that the process is reversible, so if it's cooled down, for us Ashkenazim, cooled down beyond servable as a warm food, to reheat it is a problem. So here's an issue. All solid foods have liquid in them, right? And some very obviously have liquid. So what's called solid and what's called liquid? So the vast majority of Ashkenazi poskim, contemporary, this is not really fundamentally Ashkenazim versus Sfardim. Often we talk about Ashkenazim versus Sfardim, it's the Shulchan Aruch versus the Ramah. This is much more recent that it became that kind of a split. But in the among the contemporary poskim, most Ashkenazi poskim say anything that's sitting in liquid that's considered liquid. You have, meatballs that are sitting in gravy, the gravy is liquid. So you have all the stringencies of a liquid food. You have, these are from chalapches of English. Stuffed cabbage. It's a little bissel schwer for me. It's a red enough English. You have stuffed cabbage sitting in gravy. So there's a lot of solid food there, but it's sitting in gravy. So you can only treat that as a solid if you have it out of the gravy. But once it's sitting in gravy, you can have a little bit that sort of condenses on it. But anything that's sitting in liquid, that's considered liquid. There's a very strong case to be made that that's not so. And Rav Avad Yosef has a long tshuva where he holds strongly, based on Rishonim and based on Poskim, and one of the Poskim called the Menchas Kohen, that as long as it's 51% solid, it's solid.
By weight?
Huh?
By weight?
By weight or by volume?
By volume.
That's already too mathematical, most too scientific. But the point is, that would mean that if you have something sitting in lots of gravy, but it's mostly rice, and you know it's mostly meat, even though I see the liquid, it's full of liquid, but if it's the majority of it is solid, that's called a solid food. That's a huge difference. That makes a very, very big difference. And by the way, not all Sfarim, but Rav Avadya felt strongly this way, and therefore many, many people conduct themselves that way. It would make a difference for Ashkenazim, first of all, that you shouldn't think that your friend is violating Shabbos, and second of all...
What about if I invited my friends, and I'm warming the food in my way? Can they eat it? I had this question.
I believe so.
That's not a good problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once I put a hand...
Right. It's a good question, but I believe so, yeah.
You invite
yeah.
them to your house and you say, oh, you know, if you're here, I have... No,
you shouldn't ask someone to do it for you. And by the way, this is an important concept. When we were living in Manhattan, somebody told me there's a concept called LCK, Lowest Common Kula, where if they heard of somebody who holds this way, so now everybody did that. That we're not supposed to do. Chazal say we're not supposed to adopt, you know, we're supposed to be consistent in our approach to Psak Halacha. I mean, that's a real Halacha concept. But it's important to know, first of all, anything that there is an opinion that holds that it's permissible a priori, you should first of all realize that if you did that as a mistake, the food is permissible. Sometimes people come running, am I allowed to eat the food by mistake? I did such and such. I say, yeah, well, he does that on purpose. I mean, is anything? That's a halacha concept. By the way, the same is true if one reheated a liquid anyway. Because as I told you, some Rishonim hold that once a liquid has been cooked, to recook it is not a problem. We wouldn't do it on purpose once it's cooled down beyond beyond warm. But since many Rishonim hold that's permissible, so at least after the fact, with the evidence, it would be permissible. Yeah.
So what about if you, this happens with like chickens and also like vegetables, that you, if you have like a chicken that you cooked in a sauce, right, and you take it out after you've cooked it in the sauce, Thursday night or whatever, you take out the chicken, you let it like drip off, you put it into a pan. So whatever's left on that is really whatever is coating the chicken. But if you were to heat that up on a hot plate, so after it, when you put it on, it looks like it's just coating the chicken, but afterwards you're sort of noticing that it's dripping down because it's being reheated again. Or again, like vegetables that you've cooked in oil, you scoop it out of the oil, so but then when you cook it, it sort of comes out again. Is that considered like the liquid that comes from the solid?
So it's okay. That is permissible.
And you have to take the vegetables out of the oil. I mean, like, if you have a little bit on the bottom, like,
so again, most of the poskim, when we follow the Mishnah Berurah, the Chazon Ish, Rav Moshe Feinstein, they say for Ashkenazim, if it's sitting in liquid, that should be treated as liquid. If it has some liquid on it, or if it was congealed, if it starts off as solid, we treat it as a solid.
It's congealed solid?
Yeah, yes. Congealed. Oh. Yeah. All right, so I was a little helpful tonight. Yes, yeah, so that's okay.
Even though it's sitting in it.
Even though when it gets heated, it'll become liquid. But what you heated was a solid.
Yeah.
Since what you heated was a solid, and halacha it's viewed as a solid. It's actually a case in Shulchan Aruch. They used to have like a pot pie. Basically, it was dough. They used to have like a dough that had schmaltz. It had congealed fat in it. And halacha treats it like a solid. Yeah.
So you take your cranberry crunch out of the fridge. It's not a solid. But you know with 100% certainty that there's liquid in there. But you could put it on your left on an inverted pan because it was a congealed. It was only congealed because it was cold.
And what is it at room temperature?
Yeah,
an apple pie is solid. Apple pie is solid. Yeah. 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 Again, because everything has liquid in it. You know, celery, everything has liquid in it. No, so I would say in the fridge, not, if at room temperature, it's solid. But if you froze it, you can't freeze. Let me just clarify. Don't freeze your chicken soup and then say, oh, it's a solid, and put it on. That doesn't work.
Vegetable, then in the oil at room temperature.
Oh, if they start off as liquid at room temperature, then.
So we're talking about room temperature.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what about the chicken with the sauce then? That at room temperature.
Well, what would it be at room temperature? Sorry.
So what if you had to take your cranberry crunch and put it not on the warming tray, even on the inverted plate directly, but on top of something else, so that it's like, you know, like you take a pan of chicken and put that on. The chicken is dry. Put it on there, and then you take your questionable object.
I mean, your questionable, you're not sure if it's liquid or solid.
Not sure if it's liquid or solid. Right. Cranberry crunch, whatever it is, liquid or solid, you put that on top of your pan of chicken, so it's not on the left directly. It's not on your inverted pan directly.
Well, can it reach 110 degrees there?
Probably not.
That's a non-issue. You could take cold water and put it up there. If it can't reach 110 degrees, then all of this is moot. I mean, the whole discussion only starts if the food there could reach Yad Sa. Yeah.
So let's say you have a thing of meatballs in sauce, and it's not totally congealed because there's like tomato sauce. Can you scoop out the meatballs and put them in like a pan? But I mean, you can't like totally get the sauce off.
Yeah, it's okay.
On so Shabbos, you
have to avoid borer issues. Sauce. But if you're taking what you need, yeah.
So you can scoop out some meatballs and put them in a pan and heat that up, knowing that all that sauce is going to turn into sauce.
You can have sauce on it. It shouldn't be sitting in sauce because again, everything has liquid in it. This is not a scientific. You know, we're not doing a scientific search for H2O because then nothing is considered a solid. It's Halacha works with the way things seem. If it's sitting in liquid, the way the Ashkenazi poskim look at it, that's called liquid. But it's not sitting in liquid, so it has liquid on it, in it. That's okay. Even a little bit that comes out. And again, you don't have to go crazy. It's not the end of the world, because it's what's to rely on anyway. But we're trying to call it solid. Okay? Yeah, there are other things to talk about within solid liquid that will jar my memory. Let me just jump ahead for 1 second because we were talking about rolling up aluminum foil logs. The practice that some have with the chalent pot, raising it if it's in a wraparound crock pot, that there's a fascinating history to that. In fact, in this last volume of the Shmirah Shabbos Kolchos that I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur, Rav Neuwirth writes there how he was communicating with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach literally at the end of the latter's life. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was in the hospital on his deathbed in 1995 in Adar. And he asked him something, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach seemed to respond that even where the top of something is not covered, but it has a heating element all around it, you have a pot that is submerged in such a way that it has a heating element all the way around it, even though you're not covering the lid of the pot, that would be categorized as hatmana bedavar hamosif hevel, which means insulating in such a way that there's, today what we would call there's a heating element, but insulating in a way that adds heat. So he seemed to say that that's problematic. And Rav Neuwirth writes that he wanted to clarify this with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, but he passed away. He was nifter. And I remember when this happened, there was a tumult in the halachic world at that time because people had generally been lenient about this, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is lenient on a lot of things in laws of Shabbos, but here he seemed to say that something was problematic. Having said what I just said, other poskim looked at that and said, no, that can't be, that's not a problem. There are great poskim who felt there's no issue with it, you're not covering the top of it, but largely because of that incident, so many have adopted the practice that they prop up the inner part. This is only relevant if you have a wraparound. If you have just a flat base, this is not an issue. But if you have the type of crock pot where the inner pot is inserted into a heating element, so to avoid any issue, what many people do is they crunch up, they take coins or they take crunch up aluminum foil in such a way that the inner pot is propped up. There's some area of it that's exposed, some quantifiable area that you can see, so it's not fully wrapped around. So then we're confident that it's not hatmana at all. Because again, just to give, I don't want to harp too much on the laws of hatmana, but hatmana means wrapping or insulating. And on Shabbos, you're not allowed to insulate even with something that's not Moshav Hevel. If I have a pot of soup and it's already Shabbos, and I say, you know what, I want to keep it warm for longer than I realize, so I'm going to now take towels and wrap them all around. On Shabbos, even though it's not on the fire, it's just a hot pot of soup, and I want to take a bunch of towels and wrap it up, I can't do that on Shabbos. If it's something that has a heating element, you can't even do it on Erev Shabbos, leading into Shabbos. So they used to have these urns that had jackets on them. Anybody ever see that? So people like their water piping hot. So if you have an urn and it's totally encased in this jacket, since it has a heating element, you can't even do that on Erev Shabbos. You can't even turn on Friday an urn that's totally wrapped from all sides. You have to expose part of it because...
Over my urn.
Right. So you should fold part of it back so it's not doesn't totally wrap around. Because there is a heating element. And by the way, if it's loose, if I drape a towel over a bunch of pots, it doesn't really wrap around all sides, that's not a problem. If it's all the way around, it really insulates around it, that's a problem to do even on Erev Shabbos. Yeah, sure.
Right. Well, I was gonna ask, they have all these blech covers. So
Right, but I've never seen them, but they don't really. But it's not wrapped around on all sides. Yeah.
But even so, there's it'll be exposed because it's on top of
it. Right. So there's space. There's space. I just want to clarify: if you have something that's not fully cooked, you got to be very, very careful. Especially in the winter, it comes up. People end up having to put up things late, and there isn't time before Shabbos for it to cook. If something's not fully cooked, you can't wrap that item. If you take the lid off, you can't put the lid back on. Anything that would speed the cooking process of something that is not in halacha considered fully cooked, you have to be very careful with. That's why, by the way, Rav Henkin, who was one of the great poskim, he held everybody's got to have everything cooked before Shabbos, Because in our day, I don't know if it's so much this way nowadays, but people used to have a blech where they're used to, this food I'll pull a little bit away from the fire, this one I'll push a little closer, this one I'll move here. People were used to moving things around on a large blech. He was very concerned that if you'll have one food on there that's not fully cooked, so the chalent has been up for 12 hours already, I can move it here, there, it's fine. But then the chicken soup I just put up an hour ago, and I'm playing with that also out of habit. So now I had something that's not fully cooked, and I moved it away from the fire, and I moved it back to the fire, I just cooked on Shabbos. So he held very strongly, everything's got to be cooked before Shabbos, which we usually try to do. But life is not perfect, and people are busy, so if you're putting things up closer to Shabbos, you have to be very careful. There, it's not a hatmana issue, it would be a real cooking issue. If there's something on the fire, even not on the fire, if I took something off the fire, it's not fully cooked, and I take the lid off to put the lid back on, I'm now holding in the heat, and something that's not fully cooked, that would be considered cooking.
Not just like Shabbos morning when you put everything right on your blech, can you cover it to keep it warmer than if you it wasn't covered? Like with a towel or a blech cover or whatever.
You're talking about putting the blech cover on Shabbos?
Yeah, on Shabbos morning. Like, or take all your stuff. Like, take all your stuff out of the fridge and put it on the blech, but if you wanted, like, if you left it on the block,
but everything's cooked.
Everything's cooked.
As long as it's not real hatmah, not really wrapping around. Yeah.
So even if, like, the food itself is covered with tinfoil, let's say, like, it's a dish and it's covered with tinfoil, you can put the black blanket, whatever it is, on top of that.
So let me just clarify. When you wrap something in tinfoil, sometimes that itself can be considered hatmana. Sometimes something is in tinfoil just to hold its shape, but if the function of the tinfoil is really to keep the heat in something, then to put that on a heat source would be considered hatzman, would be considered insulating to hold in the heat. There you should open it. Let's say you put it on top of a challah.
It's the tinfoil is like loosely on top of the dish or whatever.
Yeah.
Crunched around or whatever. But you can put the towel or blanket or on top of that.
Yeah, that'd be okay.
If you take the chicken out of the oven, it's a dry chicken, and it's tightly covered in foil, you have to open the foil when you put it on the blech. You can't put it on completely closed.
Well, I think you're probably talking about just in a tin, but the tin isn't wrapped.
It is completely wrapped.
But the tin per se is not wrapped.
It's not wrapped.
It's in a tin just because that's its utensil, that's its container. So that wouldn't be a problem. But if you had something that doesn't really need tin foil and you put it in tin foil, sometimes it's not so clear. There's discussions people would put kishka into the chalent. Is it wrapped in tin? You have big poskim talking about, why did I wrap it in tin foil? Was it to keep it together? It shouldn't fall apart? Or was it there to hold it, to keep it warm? It's a whole discussion. Yeah?
Are timers on the blech or hot plate or whatever permissible?
Yes, but you can't really do too much that you wouldn't be able to do without it.
For safety. Fire.
Yeah, if a person wants it to go off,
right. Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, but any time when you wouldn't be allowed to put it there, you wouldn't be allowed to put food on it if it were off, for the most part, you can't put food there. I'm sorry, let me say that again. Any time where you wouldn't be allowed to put the food there if it were on, you generally can't put it there before it turns on, for it to then turn on. Why is not 100% clear, but that's what the postcode ends up saying. So a timer is not going to afford us a leniency or a convenience, usually in terms of cooking or warming, but in terms of it being safer or just not wasting energy, there's no reason why not. If I don't need it on anymore.
So if you're set, let's say if you're, can you set your plateau to warm up and leave before, like put your food out onto the plateau and leave before the thing goes on?
If it's food that you'd be allowed to put on,
anyway, then it's fine.
Yeah. If it's a dry kolgon, it's a type of plot that you can't cook on. So if it were on, I'd be allowed to put it on there so I can put it on before it goes on. It's no problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask for the hot plate. Do I need to cover with the foil the pieces that are showing the temperature or not?
So this is mostly for shahiyah. See,
just like for general, I want to know if it's a chmara or it's like a tchila.
It depends what you're using the hot plate for.
If I'm using it only like for warming, like I'm not cooking anyway.
Warming what, the dry food?
Yeah.
Yes, so then you shouldn't have to, no. The food is already cooked.
Before Shabbos, and I'm not doing it on Shabbat. I mean, like the pieces that I'm putting like in the electric, you know, in the shaker. Just like the pieces of
The plug.
The plug, not the plug by himself. Just the pieces like I'm having like, you know, the little light.
The dial or something.
Yeah.
But that's where you adjust it.
Adjusting it not on Shabbos, like before. Right.
But the dial, yeah.
Do so, I need to cover it?
So. I mean, it's like this. The one category I didn't talk about is Shehiya. Usually on Shabbos, you're allowed to have your equipment do malacha for you. The Gemara says you can put olives in an olive press and let the press do the pressing on Shabbos, even though you're not allowed to crush olives on Shabbos. But if you put it in before Shabbos, not a problem. Cooking is an exception. Cooking, under certain circumstances, I am not allowed to have my oven do cooking for me on Shabbos. If I put up food before Shabbos, there is a type of prohibition. It's easily circumvented, but there is a category of prohibition where I would not be allowed to have my oven do cooking for me on Shabbos. What's the concern? The concern is I'm going to come in on Shabbos, the food is not fully cooked, and I'm going to start playing with the temperature. It's not getting cooked fast enough, so I'm going to raise it. So in times of old, they would stoke the coals. There would be chalim, there would be coals there, and they would stoke the coals. Nowadays, for us, that's turning up the knob. Even though Rav Moshe says it's not really true. Well, we'll leave it at that. I didn't say that. It's true. It's true. We're afraid you're going to discover that food is not fully cooked. All week when food is not cooking fast enough, I raise the temperature. So here too, you're going to raise the temperature. So the idea of a blech is to cover the fire. In times of old, how do you remember not to go over and play with the coals to make it cook faster? Cover it. Take some ashes and cover it, or that reminds you, oh yeah, it's Shabbos, I'm not playing with it. So today also we cover the fire. Even though you would never, no one here in this room has ever adjusted the fire on a stovetop by sticking a stick especially if you have a glass top, but sticking a stick into the fire. We really do it from here, but still the minhag is to cover. But because of that, some poskim say, in order to do shehiya, it's not so much the fire you should cover, but the knobs. And then they have the very nice blasts that cover both. They cover the and the stick over the end, so then you cover both. Because some poskim hold the main thing to cover is the knobs. Rav Aaron Kudla held that way. Rav Moshe held the main thing to cover is the fire. It's best if you can cover both. So that's most relevant to shehiya. If I put up, let's say, a soup to cook an hour and a half, or an hour before Shabbos. I don't think I've ever put up a soup. Who am I kidding? But not an hour, not 10 hours. But anyway, if someone, thank goodness I never put up a soup. It probably tastes terrible. But if someone put up a soup an hour before Shabbos, so now it's not going to be cooked before Shabbos. So really, we paskin, if it's half cooked, that's good enough. Then you don't need a blech. You don't need to cover the knob. You don't need to cover the fire. It's nice to, but really the halacha is if it's half cooked, there's no issue. But if it's going to be less than half cooked, there isn't so much time before Shabbos, so then you need a blech. And the blech is to stop you from adjusting the fire. So there it's best if you not only cover the fire, but if possible, if you cover the knobs. Many hold if you cover the fire, that's good enough. But if you... Yeah, you don't really need to. If you want to do chazara, then you should cover the fire. If you're going to want to take it off and put it back, you're serving the kids early and then you want to serve someone else later, then it would be good to cover. Really, in most instances, you don't need a blech. If the way you run your Shabbos kitchen is you put up everything early on Friday, and then when you serve, you just serve once, you don't need a blech. You don't need to cover anything. You only need a blech if you intend on either returning something to the fire or you're putting things up late in the day. Otherwise, you don't really need...
Huh?
What are we doing for lunch?
Huh?
Right. Meaning we're warming dry food.
Right.
Fully cooked dry food. Yeah, so then you can...
Theoretically liquid solid.
Huh. Right, right. But so that for that you can invert a pan over the fire too. By the way, you can put a blech on Shabbos. Even if you have a gas range where there's actual fire, and even though by putting the blech there, it's going to change the shape of the fire, the poskim say, or Moshe writes it, or Shlomo Zalman writes it, that you can put it on Shabbos.
Can I just create a scenario?
Yeah.
So you have the chicken soup, it's fully cooked. You can leave it on a low flame when it's Shabbos already. You could take it off, serve the soup, and then you don't want to leave the flame going, so then you could put the blech on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Even though it changes the shape of the fire, it's not really affecting the fire. That's what the post can write. Yeah.
So my mom likes her coffee really, really hot. And like sometimes she tells me my urn, it's not hot enough. Can I put like water from the urn in the pot on the hot plate on Shabbos to make it hotter?
Right, so here's where, again, Rav Moshe holds, once it reached out to lettuce bow, you can make it hotter. So he would say yes. There are those who would say you would need one of those urns that cooked it first. But I would tell you, once it's reached out to lettuce bow, which the urn does, then you can cook it hotter. Yeah.
And I don't need an inverted pan for that. Directly onto the hot plate, no inverted pan.
You're taking it from the urn into
a pot.
Like
metal.
How would you make the hot rock?
One second. Pina mimecham lamecham. See me after class. No, I think so.
How does it get hotter if it's on a turnable pot? How does the water make it hotter that way?
Well, the urn only gets up to a certain temperature and the hot plate is hotter. Right now, suggesting to put it directly. Yeah, you should put it directly.
I would go at 6, she would go at 9, and it's okay. Right. They all, like, aren't...
I believe that's okay.
Like, my mom likes to dip her cup in hot water, and then, like...
I believe it's okay.
She always reboils the water. Like, she really likes super, super hot.
I believe it's okay, if that's your intention.
Yeah.
So how come some people, like, they put, if you're putting water into a cup from an urn to pour into, like, your shaney or shishi, how come some people say if there's a little bit of water left in that cup and you're you have to get it completely dry to reuse it, if you're saying you can even reheat a coffee straight from the urn, why would you have to worry about that drop of water?
If the water's already cold.
But if you just go right straight from the urn, dumped it in your coffee, went back to
the
cellar, then you don't have to worry about it.
I'm glad you bring that up. So, I mean, it's like this. If you're going a few times to the urn, you're taking hot water, maybe you're pouring it somewhere else, and you're taking more. So to take from the urn is a kli rishon. The urn is where the water is cooked. Your cup is a kli sheni. So if you're taking hot water from the urn into this cup, so let's say, like we said before, if I have a tea and there's some left that's warm, then I can pour directly from the urn onto that, and that's not a problem. If it's cold already, so again, here too, Rav Moshe Feinstein holds, if you're just talking about tiny droplets, and it's from something that was cooked once. In other words, I had a cup of tea, and the amount that's left there is minuscule. I mean, so he holds you don't have to dry it out, because first of all, some Rishonim hold that once a liquid is cooked, it's cooked. And even though we don't really rule that way, but the amount that's left here is minuscule, and you don't benefit from it. You're not getting any more to drink because of those droplets. So because that heals, you don't have to go drying it out. If you had washed that cup with cold water, and now you want to pour hot water on it, that's a little more of an issue, because then that water was never cooked. So that's more of an issue. By the way, you just remind me of something else. I'm using mental associations here. In theory... Oh, never mind. It's not going to come up. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I was at somebody's house and they took the top off their crock pot and put a pan with food on top of the chamois pot. And so I guess the steam is coming up and cooking it. I'm not sure if there was like chicken with liquid in it or not. I'm not sure what was in that pan, but is that a problem at all?
So the pot was open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they put like the lid on top of whatever the food was in the pan, but I don't think
But it wasn't going into the...
It might have dipped in. I think it did dip in a little bit.
Right. So, I mean, it's like this. We don't put anything into a kli rishon omed al gabei ha'esh. If something is on the fire, then the halachas, we're not supposed, it's not the end of the world if you did it, but we're not supposed to put anything, even a fully cooked food is not supposed to be put onto the fire. It looks too much like cooking. Even if a piece of chicken is fully cooked, but to put it into a kli rishon that's on the fire, you don't do it. If I take the challan off, then I could put a kugel into it. But if it's still on, we're not supposed to. So if it was propped up in such a way that it's really just on the pot, not in the food, it should be okay.
On the lid, like the glass
lid. On the lid, that's for sure fine. Yeah. So here's a different issue. L'chachila, preferably when something is still on the fire, we don't stir it and we don't cover it. It's a little bit of a strange halacha, but if I have a challah that's fully cooked, it's Shabbos morning, that's been cooking 30 hours. So the food is fully cooked, but there's a strange concept which is a little bit elusive in its explanation, but I'm not supposed to take the lid off that pot and stir the challah while it's on the fire. Why not? I mean, it's fully cooked, what am I doing? There's a kalba, one of the Rishonim says not to do that, so l'chachila, we don't do it. That's why when you want to serve challah, you take it off first, l'chachila, and you scoop it out. By the way, in a case of pressing need, one can be lenient. If, in like an industrial kitchen, and it's too heavy to lift up the pot, as long as it's fully cooked, they will take the lid off and scoop out the challah as long as it's fully cooked. But preferably, it's better not to scoop out when it's still on the fire, because that's like stirring, and it's also better not to put the lid back on. In a case where you really need to, it's okay, because really the food is fully cooked. There's some concept that even when it's fully cooked, but when you stir it or when you put the lid back on, that's going to cook it more. How exactly, why exactly, not so clear. But we try not to, yeah, so if by covering it, if you're putting you took the lid off and now you're putting something else, and that's like replacing the cover, it's not so great. The food is still...
It doesn't cover the whole thing, but the pan. Right, because the pan's like a rectangle.
Right, so if the air is escaping, then it's probably just like putting it on warming. I would say better if it has a flat lid, better just to put it on the lid, but it's not the end. But if it submerges into it, that I wouldn't do l'chachil. But again, if everything's fully cooked, the food is okay. Huh?
If I was at that person's house again, you better not to eat that food if there was
like... You could eat the food, but send them the link to the shir. But you have to make sure everything's fully cooked. The bigger things to avoid are when something was cold or not fully, you know, liquid was cold or something's not fully, that's where you get into bigger issues. Yeah.
Does it make a difference? We were talking about before, there are crock pots that are totally immersed in the...
Right, in the heat coil, yeah.
Or the
where it's just in the bottom?
Yeah. Well, does it make a difference? Right. Does it make a difference that? Like putting a liquid...
No, but either way, no matter what kind of crock pot you have, that... pot of food is a kli rishon that's on the fire. It's either a kli rishon in the fire or on the fire, but it's not really gonna make a difference.
What about if I'm taking the pan, like if I'm using the truma, I'm taking the pan out, and then later I want to warm something inside, and I'm putting like a foil. Can I warm or not? Because it's a kli rishon.
So this is like what you were talking about before.
Any pot inside. Like just like the warm,
the clean. But you're turning over something inside of it, right? And then you're gonna put something on that.
No, if I'm not putting the plate, if I'm just putting it like right on it, like I have like a foil inside always, so then I'm just like putting like, I don't know, like
just like rust on top.
Can I warm
it? So Rav Avadya holds it. That's okay. See, Ashkenazim are a little stricter what they'll put on a blech. That's basically like a blech. You have a regular heating element, this crock pot is what you cook in, and then you put a tas, you put a piece of tinfoil there. So most Ashkenazim wouldn't put a fully cooked food directly on that. Rav Avadya holds it's okay. So.
But it's like a hot plate, the same, because my husband doesn't like it. Like, I'm not doing it, but I don't know if I can do it or not.
So, I mean, among the Sephardic poskim, there are different opinions. That's the truth. So that would be okay. Yeah, that would be okay. But it's not really touching that heating element. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about like a cholin or something? Like, how long does it need to be up for before it's considered? I mean.
So
this is the issue with my crock pot. Like, I'm always nervous because
my culinary skills, by the way, are really up there. any cooking questions, you came to the right place. Probably the least qualified answer, but go ahead. Yeah.
When should you set your crock pot for your challahs for it to be okay?
I'm going to open that up to the studio audience.
It depends how high you're putting it also.
so I mean, crock pot has different settings, so.
So put it on high for a few hours.
First. Don't most people run on a high for a few hours and then turn it down? Isn't that?
But if you put it in the showering,
you talk about the raw meat. Yeah, okay, I'll come to that in a second.
So she's asking how cooked it has to be.
Right. Like if I put it, if it was an hour before Shabbos and I turned the crock pot on and it cooks for 20 hours or whatever on low, fine. And then I turn the crock pot on throughout Shabbos and then switches to the warm setting, you know, at some point, that's fine.
No, it has to do with how cooked it was before Shabbos.
Can't you turn it on before Shabbos? Right. So let me come to that. Two people asked to lean into bed right before Shabbos.
Right.
I'll talk about doing it right before. Generally speaking,
it has to be cooked for a few hours before.
How cooked is actually 50%?
Generally speaking, you want it to be at least 50% cooked before Shabbos. Okay. Again, as I said before, it is best if it's not difficult to have everything fully cooked before Shabbos. That way, if you have to adjust something, if you take it off and put it back on. Some posts can prefer if everything is fully cooked by the time Shabbos starts. That way, if you end up playing with something, you're not going to cause any problems. If it's not fully cooked, you have to be very careful. You can't take it off and put it back on. You can't move it. If the lid gets knocked off, you can't put it back. So it's best if it's fully cooked before Shabbos. I do believe that if you put up a challant on high in the Friday morning, it's going to be cooked by Shabbos. Interestingly, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach spoke about that in Eretz Yisrael. They held that if you have chicken bones in there and people like eating the chicken marrow, and that takes a really long time to cook, that then it's not considered fully cooked until the bones get soft. Rav Moshe Feinstein says bones are not food and that doesn't matter. But in America, it's not so popular to put in chicken bones anyway. But if the food is, it's fully cooked, the meat is fully done, the potatoes are done, so usually.
Right, no, I mean...
Right, right. No, but let me...
The meat is not
us.
The issue. It's the
yeah.
Chillin' itself.
Right.
Right. I'm not going to eat raw potatoes.
Right. So the truth is the meat takes the longest, so the other things really shouldn't take that long.
Yeah, but it's not going to be cooked in an hour.
I don't think we'll do it.
So setting my crock pot to cook for 20 hours an hour before Shabbos is not going to...
Right, right. But by the way, if you put a piece of tin foil, you're covered anyway. If
that's
yeah.
Well,
huh? No.
If you put the foil at the bottom,
which by the way, if you have just the flat base, you know, the ones that don't wrap around, it's very easy. You just put a piece of tin foil sticking out. If you have the wrap around, it really should make it that it's visible, so it's a little bit more foil. But if you essentially make a foil insert that your pot goes into, then you can put up the challant.
You can put up
an hour before Shabbos. It's best if you cover the knob too. Cover the knob with foil. Cover the line the inside with foil. Actually, don't cause a fire, but then you can put it up any time. If you have a blech, you can put it up any time. The other option, which a few people mentioned, is what's called kedera chaisa, which means raw meat. Some poskim didn't like using this nowadays. I mentioned Rav Henkin before. He was opposed to doing this. But pressing circumstances make for pressing measures. Most poskim hold it is legitimate that if, you know, as soon as it happens in the winter months, they didn't have time to put it up before Shabbos. You come home and it's 20 minutes to Shabbos and you realize you have to put up a challant. If you put up the meat raw right before you light candles, so that would make it permissible. The theory behind it is, the whole concern is that you're going to come in Friday night and say, oh, it's almost ready, but not quite ready. I think I'll play with the fire. Oop, Shabbos. But if it's so raw that no matter what you do, it's not going to cook before tomorrow, you're not going to play with the temperature anyway because it's not going to help. You could turn it to the highest setting. It's not going to help anyway. So if you put it up raw right before candle lighting, then it's permissible. Then you don't even need a blech. It's still better with a blech because some poskim don't like using that.
It's in it.
It could be a crock pot. It could be a pot on the blech. Whatever. Anything where you put it. Raw meat, specifically meat. A raw potato doesn't do it because a raw potato doesn't take hours and hours and hours to cook. But meat specifically, if you put the meat in raw right before Shabbos, that is permissible.
I've seen someone do that and I've been worried about it all ever since.
I'm glad I exculpated that person.
You did. You did.
You're talking
with okay.
Tears. All right.
Yeah. Rabbi, for Sfaradim from Lekatchila, it's better to put it like raw in like Misa Shabbat, like right away, or to do it before? I know it's not different, very different.
I don't know. I don't know the difference between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim on this. I don't know. I think it's fine. Yeah.
Do you need a when you buy a crock pot, does it have to Can you buy any crock pot you want, or crock pots have to follow the rules also?
I don't know the latest what's on the market. There may be some that are convenient.
Digital ones. Or the ones that, like, it can go from cooked to warm on its own.
I mean, anything that as soon as you take a pot out is going to change its setting, that's going to be problematic. If a light goes on or off, or numbers change, you know, unfortunately, the industry has gotten so complicated, you need the Star K to convince the companies to stop being so sophisticated. They have auto shutoffs now and everything, but yeah, anything that's going to change a readout obviously would not be. The simpler, the better. Halacha, the simpler it is, the better. So if
it switches to from cook to keep warm on its own without you touching it, and if you take the pot out of the crock pot and nothing happens to the display, that's
fine.
Enough,
yeah,
right?
That's fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking about coffee and liking things really hot, so with instant coffee, I've heard so many different opinions from you don't need any clean shaney because it's cooked already and, you know, coffee will dissolve even in cold water, to you needing to use a clean shaney and then everything in between.
I thought you needed a clean shaney
for coffee,
for dry
instant coffee.
Rav Moshe writes, really a cliché is okay, but he prefers to do it in a cliché, which is what I do, not to liken myself. You preface by saying you like it really hot, that's why you prefer not to flip it to the cliché. It's really okay in a cliché. Coffee. Instant coffee.
From
the urn to the cup, and then you add the...
And you have to do it a certain way, because some people say you have to... You know, just
put the coffee in afterward. If you put the coffee in before, it's not a cliché, it's irui clirisha. And then you're pouring. I didn't really go through the rules of clirisha and cliché, but when you pour from the original vessel, that cooks what's called kedei klipa. It cooks the outer surface of something. Which is why, by the way, if you have, let's say, a baby bottle and you're warming it up by pouring, let's say, from an urn onto it, that's okay, because even if the contents of that bottle weren't pasteurized, which usually are anyway, because it only cooks the outer... Sorry, pouring from a klirishon cooks the outer surface, the thinnest peel on the outer surface of something. But it does do that. So if I have something in a cup and I pour from a klirishon, it will at least cook some of the contents of that cup. But if I let it go into the cup first, the theory being that the hot water hitting the floor and the wall of that cup cools it off somewhat... It's one level down. Then I add in whatever it is I'm adding. In this case, instant coffee, which is considered tavlin, which is permissible in a cliché. Then that's okay.
Wait, are we calling the urn cliché?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
now there is an opinion which.
You put your coffee or sugar into a cup, and then you take water.
Take from the urn into a cup. You now have water.
Pour that cup onto top of the coffee, or you.
That you can do, but you can put the coffee in already. The coffee is that cup is a cliché. Here's the urn.
Here,
yeah, you take the water into the cup, and then put the coffee into that cup.
If you like to put the coffee in first, how many cups do you need? If you like to put the coffee in the cup
So then flip it one. Take from that cup and then pour onto it.
Two cups.
Right. Right.
Urn cup on top of the coffee.
Right. 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 Let me just mention something else. Even though we said that liquids that have cooled down, even though they're pre-cooked, but they cool down, there is an issue to reheat them. And according to everybody, once it's no longer servable as a warm beverage, there's a problem of reheating that liquid, right? Even with the Ramos grade compromise, it's only if it's still warm, not if it's cold. But in a cliché, it's not a problem. So pasteurized milk can be added to coffee in a cliché. I took water from the urn into a cup. I can pour the milk in your fridge has been cooked. The milk in your refrigerator is a liquid that's been pre-cooked, so that can be added to a cliché. Yeah.
Can you take, so if you take water from the urn and put it in a cup, and then put something that's cold that you want to heat up inside the water? Yeah, like a bottle or something, like a baby bottle. Can you put it inside the cliché?
Yeah, a baby bottle would be okay.
Like that?
It might depend on the contents. Well, no. That will be okay. Yeah. For warming something, yeah.
Does it make a difference if it's like a mother's milk versus formula?
I mean, it's not something pre-pasteurized. If it's not pre-pasteurized, cliche-y, yeah, then it should be a cliche, yeah, yeah. Just flip it once, take it from there, and then flip it, yeah.
While we're talking about coffee, I like to put a lot of milk in my
I like coffee.
Coffee
also, yeah.
And I put that coffee, the instant coffee with the hot water that was made in cliche, add milk to it, and then like warm that up on the inverted pan on the black.
So you added cold milk to it. You added
pasteurized, but it's cold.
Right.
But once it's gone into the warm hot
water, so they're not. That's very interesting.
It's not.
See
cold
if. But since you took something and you made it warm, you can't. That's a very in all my years teaching halacha shop, I never. No, that's a very good illustration. The poskim say this compromise of the Ramah is only something that has not yet cooled down. But if it cooled down and you rewarmed it, even though now it looks the same, what's the difference if it, you know, which direction? But if you rewarmed it, that milk has a status of something that you warmed, then you can't go heat it hotter. If it's never gotten down to room temperature, you can reheat it. But if it did and you heated it up artificially, then you can't actually put it on. So that's an interesting... So better heat it up first, then take it off, and then add the milk, right? That would be the way to do it.
Right.
Make it hotter on top of the, right? Yeah, okay. Think that's my cue? Thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much.